set a timer for myself. If you don't mind, I'd like to take a minute and invite our higher powers into the room with us. Thank you. Kendall, thank you so much for asking me to be of service. When Kendall asked me, I said, oh, I don't know. I don't think I can talk for 45 minutes. And she said, well, 30. And I said, I'm not so sure about that either. But I was raised in AA to not say no when you're asked to be of service, unless you have a plausible reason not to. And I didn't. No, I'm just kidding. Cliff notes, in case I get a brain fart. So my sobriety date is March 21st of 2006. I have a sponsor. So when I say that, I don't say that to be like, oh yeah, woo, look at me, how much time I got. Because it's not about that. I've got today. And thanks to you guys and being here tonight, I'll make it through tonight probably without a drink too. There's no guarantees. I got to keep doing the deal. And I have a sponsor, and my sponsor has a sponsor. And my home groups, I have two. One is the Avila Saturday morning. You'll almost always find me there at 9 o'clock on Saturday mornings. And it is a daily reflections meeting, and it reminds me of the one that I went to when I was from 2 years to probably about 7 years sober. I got sober up in Elk Grove near Sacramento. And my second home group is the Serenity group. And I'm in service to both the groups because I was taught get into service. And you know, that serves two purposes. Not only does it help keep AA going, but it also helps me connect to other people in AA. And if I don't connect with you guys, I start feeling like either I'm all by myself or I'm special. Either one is dangerous for my brain, right? What it was like, my first real drink was a screwdriver when I was about 12 years old. And my aunt and uncle seemed to think it was a good idea to let my sister and I have a screwdriver. And I had that and I wanted more. And they said no, and I got pissed. But I didn't get more. And I didn't really start drinking until I was in high school. And then it was, you know, when you can. Who had the money? I wasn't working yet. And so I was dependent on anybody that was willing to share what they had, as far as, you know, the six-pack of beer or whatever. And I accessorized my drinking not too long after I got started drinking. If I could smoke it, swallow it, or snort it, party was on. But you know, over the years, those things I was able to let go of when I either got too paranoid or it got too expensive, whatever, I was able to let those go. The alcohol, not so much. And some of the things that happened when I was drinking, when I look back on them now, I think, how on earth? God must have had another plan. There was one night after work, this is when I got out of high school, I was working with some friends from high school, and we had gone out in the parking lot and started drinking, and then I put myself into the situation where two of the guys, I hardly knew them, and I went to their place, they were roommates, to drink with them. I was the only one there with them. I mean, that, I was lucky they were gentlemen. But I got in my car really drunk and drove home. And as I was driving home, the car was acting funny. And I thought, what on earth is wrong with it? So I called a friend of mine the next morning and said, hey, can you come over and take a look at the car? Something's not right with the steering or something. I don't know. And I'm like, maybe it's just because I had too much to drink. I don't know. And he came over and looked at the car and he said, you're lucky you made it home. There was a piece that, I forget what it's called, but it goes to the wheels from the steering, and the nut or whatever had come out, and it was just hanging there. And he said, if that would have dropped off while you were driving, you would have lost control of the vehicle. Oh, okay. and then I moved back to Virginia not too long after high school to live with my dad. and was drinking there one night, and I didn't remember this for a long time. And I was a few years sober when I finally remembered that I had been driving after a bunch of us had been out drinking, and we used to have a lot of fun, go out drinking and dancing. But I was in one of my poor, pitiful me, you know, if you only knew how awful things were for me, moods, and I was driving around on the loop in D.C., and I remembered thinking back on that I think I almost ran into a big rig that was parked on the side of the freeway. And I was like, you know, I was pissed. He was laying on his horn at me. What's the matter with you? You know, it was me. While I was back there, one day I'd been drinking all day and driving around all day and feeling sorry for myself, and got a couple of friends in the car with me later on, and we were driving around at night, and it had been snowy and icy and hit a patch of ice and ended up bottoming out my car into a retaining wall, and we're lucky that none of us got hurt badly. But you know, again, God had other plans. And the next morning my dad comes in and into my room and where's your car? I wrecked it. He was pissed. He had spent the entire day before installing a radio for me in my car that he had bought me for Christmas, and his hands were scratched up and his back was sore. He was pissed because my car was not going to be operational for a while. And you know, I'm in that stage where I'm like, well, what are you so pissed about? I don't have a car. You know? Selfish and self-centered. My mom was diagnosed with cancer when I was still drinking, and I had gone back to Minneapolis to spend some time with her. I was on my way back home and was at the airport and feeling sorry for myself once again. Oh, and while I was there, I was still drinking there, and I put all these wine bottles out in the trash, and then I'd cringe when the garbage truck would come because that was literally all that was in the trash, and you could hear all this bum 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 bum. I hope she's not listening. But anyways, I was on my way back home and was going to come back when she had her surgery, and I'm at the airport in Minneapolis. There's all these people in the airport, and they're so happy, and they're so loud, and they're so obnoxious. Now, who are these people? You know, they're annoying. Don't they know I'm upset? Don't they know I'm sad? After I'd been in AA for a few years, I found out that was the international convention in Minneapolis. It was a bunch of alcoholics having a good old time. Not a glum lot. But as time went on, I stopped drinking while I was pregnant with my son for the majority of it. But once he was a toddler, I went to I just won't drink and drive. So once I started drinking, I was home for the night, which led to, of course, isolation. He had a blood infection when he was, about two. And he was in the hospital for a couple of days. Well, the first night I was okay. And the second night, a friend of mine came to sit with him so I could go home and take a shower. So I drank while I was at home and came back to the hospital. So I didn't have him in the car so I could drink and drive. The third night, somebody came to stay with him for a little bit so I could go home. I went home and stocked a bottle and snuck it back into the hospital and drank while I was in the hospital with him. Not particularly proud of that, but you know, it's what we do. And that's when I started to realize something's not quite right. You know, if I got to do this when my son's in the hospital, I don't know. When he got to sports age, about 4.5, 5 years old, I started to think, you know, I got to do something because actually, it's a little bit younger than that. I got to do something here because I don't want to be the mom that has alcohol in my water cup when I'm at his sporting events, and I don't want to not be there. So you know, I had been trying to control it. I had been trying to stop, and it just, it didn't work well. The controlling, I got really angry and frustrated, and the whole time I was pitiful and sad. But so I kind of knew that I needed to go to AA, and I just thought, how is that going to work? I don't see... I mean, I know people stop drinking, but how? I don't get it. So I started looking at the AA schedule online. And now, mind you, I was a stay-at-home mom going to school. My son was old enough to be in preschool. So I had hours during the day. And I didn't drink until I got him home, but I had hours where I could do whatever I wanted, my schoolwork, housework, whatever. And I got looking at the AA schedule online, and I thought, oh, I don't know, it's just so inconvenient. I don't know how I can do that. And finally, I thought, you know, noon meetings, he's in preschool. I can set my own schedule as far as my schoolwork. What's going on here? So, okay, fine, I'll go to the noon meeting. I pull up and park about two blocks down so I can see the entrance, and I'm sitting there watching, because mind you, and I've had this confirmed by somebody who'd know, my vision of alcoholics were old guys in trench coats with bottles and bags from under bridges, right? And an EMT that just shared at our meeting yesterday shared that that's what he ran into all the time, was these, you know, guys under bridges. And that was whether they were getting the calls. And so I said, well, okay, so I didn't just come up with this. This is not something new, right? So I sat there outside the meeting, and I'm watching, and I thought, I don't know, they look pretty normal, but... yeah, maybe not today. And I drove off and went back again the next day, bless you. And I watched again, and this time I got out of the car and I went in the room. And the room was similar to this. The door was at one end, the secretary's table and the speaker were at the other end. And there was this really pretty mural on the one wall. So being in school at the time, I was kind of like, you know, A student up front, got to hear everything, want to participate, yeah, you know. I walked in the back door, came all the way around and sat way up in the front. And I didn't realize until later that you don't do that when you're new. You sit towards the back so you can get the hell out the door before anybody catches you. So sweet Betty was sitting next to me, and she caught me. And I'm glad she did. She got me to get a big book, and she made me promise I was going to come back to the meeting the next day. And I hadn't stopped keeping my promises at that point yet. At least I don't remember any I wasn't keeping. So I came back to the meeting the next day. I saw her at a couple of different meetings, and then I never saw her again. I don't know what happened to her, but she got me back to the meetings. You know, they say stop drinking in between meetings. I didn't stop drinking in between meetings for about the first week or two. I didn't come to the meetings drunk. I didn't drink before the meeting. But as soon as I got my son back home after preschool, it was on again. And I think it was about 2 weeks sober before I finally heard somebody share that I thought, yeah, because I kept hearing, get a sponsor, read the big book, keep coming to meetings, don't drink in between. And so I heard her share, and I had never seen her at the noon meeting before that, and I asked her to be my sponsor. And I think that accountability helped me stop drinking in between the meetings and start doing the deal. She asked me when we were talking, are you willing to go to any lengths? I said, yeah, I am. And more on that later. She told me not to date in the first year. And I'm glad I took that advice, because there was a guy that I was interested in the program. We both had less than a year. We were just friends. And then it turned out that he wouldn't have been a good choice for me. know, I just, he was not a healthy person. And I couldn't see that. I could not see that. And he's gone out, I don't know how many times. I don't even know if he's back in the rooms anymore. In the first real relationship that I had in sobriety, about 7 years sober, 9 years sober. I don't know, something like that. I forget. I lose track of time. It didn't go well, and it was somebody outside the program who I thought, because he went to church where I went to church, he must be healthy, right? No. that was a hard one, because there was a boundary that got crossed, and I didn't know how to cope with that. And all of a sudden, sitting in a meeting one day, I went, my actions and reactions, I can choose how I want to react to what happened. And I'm not going to let it consume me. So, done. Heck with him. It's over. Gone. My ex-husband, my son's father, and I actually started seeing each other again in sobriety. And it didn't last, but it opened a door for us to become friends again. And if that hadn't happened when my son was really acting out in his teenage years, pre-teenage years actually, started early, and I no longer felt safe having him in my house, not because of anything that he was doing, but because of the people he was involved with, he needed to go live with his dad. I couldn't have him in the house with me. And if his dad and I hadn't become friends again, that wouldn't have been able to, that wouldn't have happened. What else do I want to share with you? My higher power. I came in the rooms with the higher power, and I'm really grateful that I had that higher power at that time, because I didn't question that I needed to find a higher power. But I'll tell you, it's not the same higher power that I have today. Not by any means. I see the vastness of the higher power that I have now that I didn't see before. And I see the way that, and I call him God, and I call him him. I don't know why. I see the way that he moves in my life and the lives of others. And I call him God shots. I never used to see those before with the God that I knew when I came into the program. And I see them in very unexpected places now. So step one, when we were going through the steps with my first sponsor, I struggled with the unmanageability, and we talked about it, and I said, but my life isn't unmanageable. And she said, well, okay, you got to start somewhere. She was smart enough to help me start with something small that I could see that was tangible, so that then I could grow into, okay, how unmanageable it really was. I had papers stacked in my house, not in every room of the house, but where they were stacked, they were just a mess. and that was my first recognition of unmanageability in my life. It grew from that, but at least I had that start. And step two, I took exception to restoring me to sanity, because I wasn't insane, thank you very much. Well, yeah, okay, maybe my thinking, I don't know. and I just shared with you about my higher power evolving. Step four, when I was writing that up and we were working through that, and step five, it was interesting to have it pointed out to me that I had a part in the things that had happened and the resentments that I had. Because as I mentioned before, it was poor me, poor pitiful me. Don't you know, if you only knew what I was going through, you would be sad and upset too. And then, you know. And doing step five, it was embarrassing. I mean, who doesn't get embarrassed when they start telling somebody their deepest, darkest secrets, right? She's going to laugh at me. She's going to think I'm a horrible person. I don't want to do this. But it was such a relief when it was done, especially when she said, yeah, that happened to me too. That helped be more open about what was going on and a particular resentment that I had. Six and seven are still a work in progress. Man, I gotta keep remembering defects of character. So my sponsor's sitting right over here, and I hesitate to say things that might come back. She will too. She'll pull out her Bic. And step eight. You know, it's funny, the longer I'm sober and the worse my memory gets, the more old memories resurface. What is that? And there's occasionally fresh memories that come up that reveal something new to me that I haven't looked at before. Just today when I was thinking about that car story where my dad was so mad and I was like, well, what's wrong with you? I made my amends to my dad, but I don't think I made an amends for that, because I don't think I remembered that I had been so selfish. You know, I don't think I had seen it from his perspective until I was thinking about sharing that with you guys tonight. And it's, wow, oof, that's not pretty. So that willing to go to any lengths when I was making my amends, and my ex-husband was on that list. And of course, I waited as long as I could on that one. And I did not want to make an amends to that man, because he's the one that left. And I'm walking through the house one day, and all of a sudden I stop short and I hear this voice, willing to go to any lengths. And I thought, oh, dang. If I don't make an amends to that man, I'm going to drink again. And I don't want to go back there. So I started trying to make my amends to him. And my sponsor, you know, the usual, you got to go meet face to face. He's like, mm-mm, not happening. So I told her, and she says, ask him again. I asked him again. He says, nope, not happening. I think it was his girlfriend at the time was telling him no. I don't know. So she finally relented a little bit, and she said, okay, you can make an amends over the phone with him. And okay, fine, we'll do that. And so I did. And it was that amends, I'm convinced, that God used later on for us to try again. And to discover that, yeah, a relationship wasn't the right thing for us, but we could still be friends. 10, prayer and meditation. I do that every morning, and before I even get out of bed, I literally put the pillows up, roll over on my hands and knees, and I do my prayers, and then I get up and go do a meditation and some writing. And there are very few mornings, especially now that I'm retired, thank God, there are very few mornings where I don't get to do that anymore. And boy, when I don't, it just feels, the whole day just feels heavy. And I just don't have that sense of serenity at all. I've been known to go back into the living room and sit down in the middle of the day. Okay, let's try this again. Because one of the things I learned in early sobriety is you can always start over. Yeah. I even used to do that with my son when he was, because he was four when I got sober. And we would have these mornings when he was like five or six, and one of us would get kind of me, 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 you know. And I'd say, okay, wait a minute. Can we start over? yeah, okay, let's start over. Okay, let's do it. And then he started saying that to me, Mom, can we start over? So this program not only taught me how to live life a little bit differently, but it's also by extension taught my son. And I'm so grateful for that. Newcomers and old timers. Yeah. So, and then with step 12, carrying the message, I think that's, well, is it my opinion? I've heard it said, so it's not just my opinion. There's more than one way to carry the message. I don't often have women ask me to sponsor them, but, and this is what scares me, because right now I've got a sponsee, and God has always put sponsees in my life when something's going on, and everything is so good right now. I'm like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? But, you know, just walking up to the newcomers and saying hi. And one of the things that I do to get myself out of my comfort zone and to do something that I'm not really comfortable with is to just smile and welcome everybody. And oddly, I get to know people that way. And then I feel more comfortable at the meeting. Oh, one of the things I wanted to share with you, when I was new with, and my sponsor, I was whining to her one day about how I just didn't feel like I fit in, you know, I just, it just, everybody was, you know, she says, show up early and make coffee. Okay, I'm not sure how that's going to help, but I'll do it. And so I started showing up and making coffee, and next thing you know, people are coming in and they're getting their coffee and they're talking, and you know, I got to know people in the meeting. Huh, interesting. So that's why I reach out to people now, because I don't show up to make coffee, but I want to try and connect with people. And it's the people in these rooms that have kept me sober, not the people I meet out there. So what it's like now, I have relationships with my parents and my sister that I didn't used to have. I choose to kind of be in avoidance, you know. yeah, if you want to come see me, fine, but I'm not coming down there. I moved down here in 21 to be closer to my parents and my sister. I had the opportunity to do that because I was working from home when all the craziness happened, and I came to the conclusion I can work from home anywhere. Why am I staying up here in Sacramento? Everybody's got their bubble and my bubble's down there. So I made the move. I have a relationship with my son that I wouldn't have expected, because things were not going well when he was in his tween years and his teen years. And I almost lost him when he was 16, and he wouldn't talk about it. He wouldn't hear anything I had to say. He didn't want me to ask questions. But now we can talk, and now I can tell him, my mama heart needs to hear your voice, and he knows I need to get on the phone with him. And I treasure that relationship, and I'm grateful to his dad, because I know that his dad told him more than once, your mother loves you. Your mother loves you more than anybody else. He told me he said that to him, and I know why he said it. He didn't say it, tell me why he said it, but I know he said it because my son was pissed that I made him go live with his dad. And in AA, I grew up a military brat, so we moved every 2 or 3 years, and I didn't have long-term friendships until I got to AA, and now I have friends that I'm still friends with from Sacramento, where I got sober. As a matter of fact, one of them I'm going to a conference with in January. I have a tribe. We've got a book study, and it's really special. You know, it's totally God. It's totally God. I got to go to International in 25. I was going to go in 20, but darn, that didn't work out. I get to get out of my comfort zone and go help out in special events like the District 22 Conference and the Women's Luncheon in Morro Bay. You know, I didn't know anybody in those places, and I just, okay, I got to do this. You know. And yesterday we got to have a celebration of life for one of our members in Serenity, and I got to be present. I didn't know him particularly well, but for me, that was getting out of my own selfishness and showing up to be of service, because I didn't show up for my grandparents when they passed. I didn't show up for my mom when she passed. I was busy back at the house getting drunk when my mom passed and everybody else went out to the cemetery. Not something I'm proud of, but you know. So that's the things that I get to do today. And I wouldn't change my life today for anything. AA, it sounds so corny and people say it all the time, but it's so true. AA has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. And for that, I am hugely grateful. I'm not going to eat, I'm done.
Let's give Julie another round of applause.